In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And we have a little bit of information for y'all listeners right now.
Yes.
After some thorough discussion, thorough being like, you know, 10, 20 minutes or something like that. That's thorough.
It was a pretty good amount.
I don't know. It was a late night call. I don't remember exactly how long it was.
Yeah.
I was already in bed, dude.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Ah, well.
You're a bit of a night owl. I'm like
somewhat
10:30 and my ass wants to go to sleep.
Yeah, I know.
And so
it was just an epiphany, man. It hit me. I was having a conversation.
It was an epiphany.
It was an epiphany.
Bolt of lightning has struck your brain.
Well, that must hurt.
That's a Wayne's World reference, just so you know.
Oh, it is.
Yes, it is. Me and my movie references. So yeah, Mike had a bit of an epiphany, and we had some discussion about some things, and we realized a few things about kind of the format of what we've been doing here on the podcast. Now, originally, and obviously with the name of the podcast, we were designed to talk about Xennial stuff because it's the Xennial Chronicles.
Yeah.
And now, admittedly, life experiences, things that happen, things that we're into, that's still part of the Xennial experience because we are Xennials.
Yeah.
So whatever we're dealing with should fall under it, but we did get away from kind of the informative stuff of what happened during the childhood and teenage years of us as Xennials. So one thing we're going to try to do is get a little bit back more to that. But the other thing that we found is some of the things that we were doing on here as far as the language we were using, the way we were talking about things.
Yeah.
We both felt we may be being a little bit restrictive of our personalities.
Yeah. It felt to a point where it just felt a little bit more dishonest.
I felt
dishonest about the way that I approach things, the way that I process stuff, and the way that I talk about stuff in general. I felt like I wasn't inserting my personality into my opinions.
Yeah, because we were trying to be, and the reason for that is not that we were lying to anybody, but because we were trying to be as sanitized as possible to reach the biggest possible audience.
Right.
And so we were making sure that we were careful with our language.
Yeah.
Quacking us out whenever or whatever barnyard sounds that Mike wanted to introduce.
As fun as those sound.
To cover up any profanities that we might use.
Yeah.
Any explicit language. Now, this does not mean that we're going to suddenly start talking about politics or religion or any of those things. Those are still off the table because those are still very volatile subjects, and we still don't necessarily want to get into that.
Well, we can also, here's the thing, we can be honest about who we are without having to go deep into that stuff.
But we're warning people now. It will be in the title heading, Mike said, for this episode. I leave that stuff to Mike because he does all of that technical wizardry of making sure everything looks proper and comes proper.
Yeah.
But from this point forward, the Xennial Chronicles will have explicit content. We will be listed as having explicit content on YouTube.
Yep.
If that's the platform that you look for us at, I don't know.
Well, I've already gone through that. There was this thing with COPPA, which is basically a child protective law.
Yeah.
And there was this huge thing with YouTube. YouTube had marketed themselves. Yeah, it just kicked in.
Yeah, I saw that.
Might as well talk about this because this is really, really important.
Yeah.
It kicked in at the first of the year.
Yeah, there were some videos my son had problems loading.
There were a lot of people legally. Yes. Okay.
Because of that.
So, check this out. Have you heard about this and what it is and why it's a big deal?
No, but I want to throw
this. I want to
throw this out, the fact that one of the videos he was trying to watch was in Finnish. Different language. Okay, my son likes to watch repeat videos
Of
certain...
from Finland, yeah.
Well, he likes to watch repeat videos of certain scenes in movies.
Yes.
But he'll watch them in multiple languages. So it's like an American...
So he already speaks the language, and now he already knows what's being said. Now he's hearing it in a different language.
I don't think he's trying to learn the language. I just think
he just knows what's happening.
He finds the sounds interesting
of
the different languages. But he'll watch like a song from a movie, and he'll watch it in like 15 different languages. And sometimes phonetically be able to keep up with the different languages. It's kind of cool.
Oh, that's fun.
Again, I don't know how much he understands, but I know that he can at least phonetically keep up. Well, he was trying to watch a video in Finnish, and it wasn't working, and he was pissed to the wall.
Okay, well, that could very well be that it is a... That could be a region-based deal. Video is not available in your region.
It said the reason it wasn't available was due to the child protectivity
stuff. All right, here's what's going on with that. I might as well give you a breakdown on that. Please. So, I'm not a lawyer.
This isn't what we scripted and planned for this segment, but it's important.
It's important. It's so important. So, yeah, especially being that our stuff is available on YouTube, we have already designated that the channel is technically not meant for kids, and I'll get into that. So, basically, YouTube is not necessarily handling this extremely well. One of the things that YouTube did once they kicked off real big after they were bought by Google and people started putting, you know, copyrighted content on there and ad revenue, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff, because that's kind of part of it. That's how you make money on YouTube. You put up videos, they're entertaining, people watch them, and it's just like network television. The more people that watch something, the more an advertiser wants to put an ad on it, the more money that company makes for putting that show on television.
By the way, we want to stress...
This is how TV ratings work and why they're important.
Yeah, we want to stress the fact that no advertisers approached us yet to put anything on advertisements for
us. But basically I'm doing this now and I actually did it with our other channels with my other channels too, because they're not kid oriented content. So there's a law. I do not remember what it fully means, but it is a law that was established in the 90s called COPPA. And what the COPPA law is a child protective law that stops personal information from being gleaned from children under 13 years old.
Okay.
This is why when you start a YouTube page, you have to be at least 13 years old to agree to
all the services and whatnot.
Because it pulls things like internet history, it uses cookies, it uses your watch history to feed you more videos. Not those kinds of cookies.
Ah, damn it.
I know.
I love cookies.
I know. So this is kind of important because YouTube started marketing as one of the largest providers of children's content.
Yeah.
And there is an offshoot app called YouTube Kids.
Yes.
There is one, and it literally just puts out videos. Now, here's the problem with YouTube Kids and the COPPA protection. There's a lot of complication, but I'll just go with the law. Basically, YouTube was pulling watch history to feed more videos to kids of the same type of thing. And not just based on specific, it's based on search history. Somebody looks up Transformers, more Transformers videos come up.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll throw in some G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll throw in some of the anime stuff, if that's the case. Now, Transformers may be just a retro thing, but we're talking like Disney content.
Yeah.
We're talking a lot of the, you know, Disney content, other properties that are children's properties specifically.
Yeah.
The biggest issue with this is the pulling of personal information to feed the right videos based on watch history.
Yeah, makes
technically
sense.
Fine if you're over 13 years old.
But under 13,
but you
that
can't
falls
pull
under
anything
this law.
From it. Yeah, and that includes, you know, name, address, watch history, all that kind of stuff, which is the power of their platform. And the reason why YouTube, the biggest reason why YouTube makes as much money as they do as a free viewership program is from advertising revenue. And the reason why people pay for advertising revenue so much more so than maybe possibly network television, unless they know it's a big, unless they know it's a huge, something big like the Super Bowl or something, right? Super Bowl ads are insanely expensive because everybody's watching them.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, the Super Bowl should be a national holiday in America. I'm just saying. I know what I'm going to be doing on Super Bowl Sunday, whether my team is there or not. I'm sitting and watching the damn Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't even like. I'm not even like into football, but I like taking Super Bowl Day off personally.
Yeah,
but that's completely beside the point.
I don't work on Super Bowl.
Getting back on the subject here, so the COPPA laws were established in the 90s. When YouTube starts advertising that they're a major kids platform. And they weren't putting through any regulation, and they were pulling things like watch history. They were violating the COPPA laws.
So now we start having issues with that.
Yes, exactly. Now, here's the thing. In order to I believe they're like paying a fine and all this kind of stuff too. Like it's kind of a big deal. But what they also did was YouTube is very similar to they take the stance similarly to Napster, because the creators are the ones, the people that have the channels, that put the channels out there, like put their video content
like
out
us.
There, are the ones in control of the content because they're making it, right?
Yeah.
So they have to deem whether or not this content is appropriate for kids or explicit or not.
Yeah.
Now, us moving over to a more explicit platform doesn't necessarily mean anything. That's not part of this. And it doesn't have to be inherently explicit in order for it to not be kid-oriented.
Yeah.
But it can include major things, and there is a broad spectrum. Like, it cannot include animated cartoons. Or, you know, if it's got bright imagery or animated cartoons or puppets or something like that. Now, obviously, there's Team America World Police does not qualify under this kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's some adult puppet humor right there.
Right, that's adult puppet humor. There's adult animated humor. So if somebody throws up a clip from Sausage Party up there, that's adult humor.
Yes, it is.
And there's
Do not let your kids watch Sausage Party. It is an animated movie. Yes, it is not an animated movie.
It is also called Sausage Party.
If you don't figure that out, you are dumb. Really, you are dumb.
Right. So so there's obviously a few things that are a big deal with this.
Yeah.
And COPPA got on, the government got on them. We're like, what are you guys doing? You can't do this. So YouTube had to change its platform by the new year.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's where these changes are coming.
That's where these changes are coming. Now, the biggest issue for creators, and this is something where creators lost their minds for like 2 months. Okay. I've been seeing it since November, where they have to change the content of their, basically, they're stuck between a catch-22 as creators. They have to state that their content is adult-oriented or child-oriented, period. One way or the other.
Yeah.
Not, and the thing is YouTube took away personalized advertisements and ad revenue, major ad revenue, for kids' content because they can't guarantee that personalized ads can be put on kids' content.
Point, yeah.
And they also can't guarantee a watch history. They could say, is this kids' content? Is it not kids' content? That's the option they've given creators. But what's funny is there is technically a third option lined out in the law that YouTube did not give. Which is family-oriented content.
Ah.
Adult-oriented content that can still be watched by children.
Something like The Simpsons.
Yes. Technically speaking, yes, exactly. What's funny is The Simpsons may actually pull in a catch-22. Because even though it's adult-oriented content that's child-friendly, in this law, they've only given two options. Is it adult content or is it not adult content?
Yeah.
If you took The Simpsons and started throwing F-bombs in there, then obviously it's adult content, specifically not meant for kids, period. But if you, in its current format, the fact that it's an animated show, even though it has adult humor, you don't know whether or not it's adult-specific content or if it's child-specific content.
Yeah.
So what this does is it works like a double-edged sword because there's a lot of people, a lot of channels that just made money from personalized revenue by adding adult themes to children's content. There was something that was called ElsaGate that happened a long time ago. I'm not even going to get into that.
Is this in reference to the character
Elsa from Osa? The character Elsa from Frozen. Yeah.
Did they have her doing sexual stuff?
Yes and no. So it introduces adult themes. And like, there's like, dude, I'm talking like predatory stuff without it actually being fully explicit. Like,
I understand what you're saying.
You know, and other things too. You know, Mickey hangs out with Minnie Mouse and they go into a room with a closed door and then Minnie Mouse ends up pregnant. An adult can glean the information and go, what the hell is that? And, a kid looks at that and actually, you're just literally teaching them the capabilities of that.
That's a fun note that you mentioned, Mickey and Minnie.
Yeah.
There was actually a point where, while Walt Disney was still alive, some of his animators actually made a short film.
Mm-hmm.
Of Mickey and Minnie having sex and showed it to Walt.
And Walt showed it to Walt?
It was a birthday present that they made for Walt, and Walt fired him on the spot.
Good.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
He didn't want that kind of thing associated with those characters. He wanted to retain the whole
thing. I didn't hear about that. I mean, I've heard of...
There's a lot of weird stuff that happens with Walt Disney, but yeah, a lot of rumors involved with Walt Disney.
Wow, dude, that's...
I'm
gonna have to Google that. I've never heard of that.
Again, I think I told you before, we may have said it here on the podcast that his last words were in reference to Kurt Russell being the key to everything.
I didn't know that.
He had massive love for Kurt Russell.
That's killer.
And Kurt Russell was like a teenager at the time, young adult, something like that. Teenager, I think. He'd been in a couple of films.
Was he in Old Yeller? I know he was in Fox and the Hound.
Well, he's a voice in Fox and the Hound.
He's a voice in Fox. He plays the Fox, doesn't he?
He's the Hound.
He's the Hound?
Mickey Rooney is the Fox.
Oh.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney's the Fox. He's the Hound. He's Copper.
But anyways, getting back onto it, what they did was they removed personalized ad content from children's videos, which means an ad sometimes won't even load, which means a lot less money is made for those advertisers because they want personalized ad content.
Yeah.
This drives down revenue built by these animators that are these people that are making.
So you're saying like these eight-year-olds who unbox crap and have become millionaires by unboxing stuff on YouTube are not going to get any money anymore?
That's very possible, because they have to make it kid related content. You know what sucked
about that?
You know what sucked about that? The top moneymaker on YouTube was an 8 year old kid last year,
and what was
eight
it,
years old.
He was an unboxer.
He was an unboxing kid. This kid's got his own toy line now.
It's a good thing
that he moved forward, but the problem is he's only going to have like validity for like a year or two.
I'm kind of glad about that because that's like that. Just admittedly, I don't necessarily want to feel bad for somebody else's good fortune. But that's really like, dude's 8 years old and all he does is open toys.
You know,
and he got
more power to the kid. Dollars.
I'll open toys for $8 million. Hell, I'll open toys for like $500,000. Crap. I mean, just give it to me.
But here's, I mean,
I have to stop that, James.
That's the thing
James,
that sucks because
No more craps. No more craps. I'm allowed to say shits now.
Yep.
I said it. Go on, move on.
But yeah, this is a really big deal because the COPPA Act stops people from making money for something like this. That cut him off at the knees.
Wow.
For being able to make money. And
maybe
I'll be real.
In the circus.
Learning how to work the system like that.
Yeah.
And you know it comes down to his parents or whoever his management is. An 8 year old kid isn't, you know, that. He just opened up a toy, threw it up on YouTube, and then a bunch of people watched it because it was something from like freaking Minecraft or Fortnite or something. Yeah. I don't know what it was. But then this kid makes his own toys. He has a toy line?
I mean, that's cool.
Brilliant.
That's cool.
And then on top of that, he did it based on just opening toys on YouTube.
Yeah.
That's, if you can work the system like that, more power to you, personally.
I'm a bit jealous, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm jealous too, but I'm not the one who thought about doing it.
Nope. Didn't think about it.
You know? Cool. I'm all about it. Now, that aside, this means that kind of channel can't make any money anymore, though.
Wow.
That's freaking insane.
Really a wow.
Yeah, it is. But on top of that, you also have to change exactly what kind of channel you are.
Yeah.
So us kind of essentially going on the more explicit end. Now, not to say that there was anything that we were putting out that was specifically kid-friendly content or even family.
We weren't aiming for kid-friendly.
It was family-capable, but it wasn't like, you know, really that big
of a deal. We definitely weren't aiming for kids to be listening. Our market isn't necessarily them.
Yeah.
And again, this comes down to, I don't know that we have any listeners that are kids unless the people who are listening play it around their kids.
Yeah, you know, somebody putting it in the car on the way to work or something, or dropping their kids off of school.
We've tried to make it so that you could listen to it in any environment without using explicit language.
Yeah.
But the simple fact is, like Mike says, it's if you actually were to sit and have a conversation with either one of us, and it doesn't matter who's around us. My father could be sitting next to me.
Yeah.
Hell, I have a grandmother living in the house that is around me at least at dinner times, but multiple times throughout the day. I do not necessarily check my language. I do so in public, you know, but that's just because it's polite and proper. You don't know where there's kids around hearing. You don't know where there's people that might be offended. And I try to be an appropriate person in a public setting.
Right.
But it also depends on the public setting. If I'm at a McDonald's, I'm not, you know, saying various different words, talking about various different things, because that's just not the place to do it. You're going to have kids running around. If I'm at a bar, then hell yeah, I'm going to be saying it, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, crap, every time, I would say almost every single time I've been in a bar with you, sir, I've had to repeat, I've almost been forced to repeat, fuck this and fuck you, over and over and over again. I mean, admittedly, I'm kind of a part of that happening, but still,
right.
I would say every time you and I have been in a bar, that has happened.
Probably, yeah.
Yes. So,
completely like reworking the lyrics to karaoke songs, depending on how many drinks in we are.
No, we just changed one. The only one that I remember changing regularly is Jesus to Satan.
No.
Which other one? Because we do the Jesus to Satan one
all
the time.
You and Scott would sing Wanted Dead or Alive, and I'd back him up. And then the two of you guys would sing I've Seen a Million Faces and I've Fucked Them All.
That's mine. Yes, that's mine.
And then he started adopting it, and it was hilarious. That actually comes from
the song being on Rock Band or Guitar Hero or one of those games.
Okay.
Remember, we used to play those games at your house all the time when we do the we bring all that stuff for the parties.
Yeah.
So that it was pseudo karaoke, but people playing along with the instruments on it as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was my thing for that song, was to change that one lyric. Then of course we also changed lyrics to the song Say It Ain't So, but I'm going to be nice enough to not repeat the lyrics. Okay. That we did for that one.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Because I don't, for
the explicit language, we're going to be a little bit more honest, yes, but we're not going to go like full on Howard Stern or anything we're not going to be all weird predatory.
Well, in that specific one, I mean, the Weezer Say It Ain't So.
Right.
We would talk about a certain person's family member being a hoe. Do you remember this at all?
No.
Well,
I hate you, though, because I know exactly what they are.
You probably know exactly what it is. And I didn't come up with the original usage of that of that person's family member. I don't know that person's family member personally, so I don't want to say anything bad about them because I don't know them. I'm sure they're a perfectly nice person. from what I've heard about them, they're a perfectly nice person.
It's terrible.
One of our other friends, your guitarist friend.
Of course.
He's the one who originally would use that as a joke regularly, if you remember. And I just incorporated it as the song because it fits the rhythm of it.
Of course.
So, you know, you have some fun. But no, the
very
only,
cruel. Quite
I,
cruel.
I didn't know that Scott had had taken over doing that in karaoke.
Yeah, he did it in karaoke, and it's hilarious.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much. I'm glad that you made that go forward. I'm gonna tell the wife. She'll love that.
If she doesn't hear it here first, you know.
I don't know how often she listens anymore. She listens to me talk enough, damn it. I feel bad for having to listen to me talk on a daily basis. I don't want to have to put her through another hour each day of me talking. It's torture enough.
Yeah. So make sure that you guys know, and hopefully we'll at least warned it enough before we started letting loose. But yeah I should have said beforehand, content. Be like, shut this off, move on, play the old stuff or play something else.
I mentioned that we had explicit content before anything was said. And remember, I did the crap and then corrected myself saying I don't have to say the craps anymore. So, you know, we have at least some kind of, hey, you should have seen this coming.
Yeah.
And if you didn't, then you got other problems to talk about.
Yeah. So, yep. So letting you know, that's kind of like a thing that's going on now.
That's our changes. Really quick, I want to mention, because we've been talking about football news, that is one thing that I will still at least
mention.
Football news. The San Francisco 49ers, my favorite team, did win their playoff game this weekend.
Cool.
And so they're advancing to the NFC Championship game.
Cool.
I'm going to make a vow at this point to just not say anything else I'm not going to say anything more about football until after the Super Bowl. I'm just going to keep it quiet, not have any more updates on football until then.
Oh.
Because I know next weekend is the NFC Championship game, the NFC and the AFC Championship games. The Packers are coming into Santa Clara to play the 49ers. The Titans are headed to Kansas City to play the Kansas City Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four teams that have the possibility to be in the Super Bowl. And many people are already predicting that it's going to be a 49ers-Chiefs Super Bowl. I'm a superstitious guy. I really am. I haven't worn any of my 49er stuff all year out of my superstition. I haven't used any 49er stuff all year out of my superstition. Yes, I logically know that me wearing, buying, or using 49er stuff has nothing to do with the team's success. I know that logically.
It's a personal superstition.
Everybody's got the thing about it. So I am saying from this moment on until the 3rd of – because we'll be recording a podcast on the 3rd of February. That's the day after the Super Bowl. I am going radio silent on anything NFL related until that day.
You heard it here first and only here. James is going silent on football until the Super Bowl's over.
And all I'm going to say is this, if it is a 49ers if 49ers make it to the Super Bowl and they happen to win the Super Bowl, I feel sorry for you on the third, because whatever topic we come up with to talk about, I guarantee I'm going to be interrupting it regularly with commentary on
with football how happy I am.
Because okay. I will be a
then
level
I will try to steer the conversation in the right direction.
I will be a level of excited that you have not seen. You've come close to seeing, because last time the 49ers were in the Super Bowl,
yeah.
You were at my house for the Super Bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
You're not invited back, because last time I invited you, they didn't win, so you're not coming back to my house for the
that
Super
Bowl. That was such a fluke of a situation.
Superstition, man. I'm not inviting Scott back either.
Really?
Hell no.
Wow.
No, one, he probably wouldn't come. He's got family.
Yeah, you know, he's got his own things to
do. But even still, and the funny thing is, I would, if I told Scott you're not coming over to my house for the Super Bowl if the Niners do get into it, if I told him you're not coming to my house for the Super Bowl, they lost last time, his response would probably be like, yeah, we can't be in the same place for the Super Bowl. Because while he's not as superstitious as me, he'd totally get what I was saying, mm-hmm. and not want to be anywhere near me for the Super Bowl if that's the case. Because, you know, no, it was bad juju that time. Lots of bad juju. So, can't let the bad juju happen.
No, I can get it. I can understand it.
And now, in our first half of the podcast, we have one other thing that's major to talk about.
Yeah, what's up?
Because in the second half, like I said at the beginning, we're going to get back to our roots,
mm-hmm.
talking about things that are affected during our zennial years, during our childhood and teenage years.
Yeah.
But right now, before we get back to that, before we get into the second half of the podcast, there was something very important that happened this week. We had been, for a little while, we'd been listing celebrity deaths and talking about celebrity deaths.
Yeah.
There was a big one this week for the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
For Xennials, because I do believe a large number of the fans of this band are Xennials.
Mm-hmm.
You can go
ahead.
A
lot of them are. I mean, it kind of crosses over into a lot of boomers, a lot of Gen Xers too. Yeah.
This is, I would say, probably the preeminent prog rock band in existence.
I would say so. Like, they're probably the most prominent. There were a lot of bands that came before them. And there are a lot of bands that fit the technicality,
but not in the way that they did it.
No. These guys were, which is crazy because for a long time, these guys didn't see a resurgence until the movie I Love You, Man. That they didn't see a major pop resurgence until that movie.
Actually, funny enough, one of my favorite Star Wars related movies,
mm-hmm.
Being the Star Wars fan that I am,
mm-hmm.
Heavily features Rush. Fanboys.
Oh, yes. All the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. And yeah, absolutely. Okay. So what we're talking about, obviously, is Neil Peart, the drummer for Rush, passed away a week ago today, actually. He passed away. No, I'm sorry. It was Tuesday the 7th. Yeah. It was Tuesday the 7th is when he passed. It actually wasn't announced until Friday.
Oh, really?
Right.
See, I heard it Friday because I did something a little bit interesting on Friday, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But I heard it on Friday. I didn't know that it happened on Tuesday, but that's not surprising because apparently he had been keeping his illness a secret for like 3 years.
He had been. So Rush had...
Were they on tour 3 years ago?
No. 2015 was the last year that they went on tour. They actually did their farewell tour in 2015.
And then,
he may or may not have had news of this going on, but here's the thing about what Neil was about, okay? First off, let's just list the musical accomplishments. He's obviously best known for being the drummer for Rush. What a lot of people don't know, especially passing fans, is that he was the primary lyricist. So Rush came out with one album with a guy named John Rutsey, who died probably about 10 years ago now.
Okay.
He couldn't hang to tour, so they ended up looking for another guy.
This guy was the drummer originally?
John Rutsey was the original guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Rutsey was the original guy. He couldn't hang as far as tour. He's like, hey, man, guys, this is too much for me.
Yeah.
I got to, you know, stay at home and do my thing. Family and all that or whatever he's got going on. He's like, I can't tour. And they're like, okay. So they find Neil. And what they end up doing is they audition him. He is on fire. He does a lot of extra things to the songs that were already there that just completely fit in. And they changed their sound kind of based on his capabilities. They started working. They didn't become a full prog band. They were just like a jammy rock band in that first album. It's one of my favorite albums of theirs. And that's just called Rush. It was our first album. It's just called Rush. But the album afterwards, which I think it's Fly By Night, the opening song on that thing is insane. It's called Anthem.
Okay.
But when they you know, set it up and all that kind of stuff, they're sitting there playing. And I remember Getty was saying something like, oh, yeah, we'd be going out, we'd be playing shows and doing our thing. And then, you know, after the show is over, we're hanging out, there's partygoers doing the, you know, the party, the hanging out, yeah, the drinking. And Neil's sitting in his dressing room just reading. Like, he's just reading a bunch of stuff. Okay. He's reading stuff by Nietzsche and Ayn Rand and, like, all this, like, philosophy. He's okay. Huge into philosophy, huge into literature. And they're like, you know what, man? This guy reads a lot. Maybe he's possibly pretty good at lyrics. So the song Anthem is based on the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
Okay. I'm going to have to – see, I'm not – Mike is directing a lot of this conversation because Mike is the Rush fan. I mean, I can look over at a poster on the wall of him from a Rush concert.
Yep.
So, I mean, this is like one of his favorite bands ever.
That is the Farewell Show. Yeah, there's a picture in my studio. My dad took me out in 2015 to go see them at the SAP Center. It was their either second or third to final show. I think after that show, they went and they played their Farewell Show in L.A.
Nice.
So we saw them at, like, it was, the performance was insane. The set was fantastic. It's a full retrospective set. It went back in time. It just kept going back.
I do want to say that I can even remember back to when Mike and I first started hanging out when we were working at Blockbuster together back in 2000, 2001. And dude was a Rush fan even back then. And I totally made fun of him for being a Rush fan. Tom Sawyer would come on the radio, which was the most common song that was played.
That was their hit. That was the big hit off Moving Pictures.
Yeah, that was the most common song that would be played. We'd be listening to it. This is back, by the way, kids, when, of course, kids aren't supposed to be listening, but still, this is back, by the way, when the car radios typically on most of your inexpensive cars had an FM AM radio, maybe a tape deck if you were lucky. CD players were still on the newer cars. So if you had an old car that your family had given you because you were 19, 20 or whatever to be driving, you couldn't afford no CD player or no tape deck in your car. You were listening to
CD AM, players FM. Were high class, man.
Hell yeah, they were back then.
CD so player in a car, what?
It'd be on the local Sacramento rock station listening to you know, whatever's coming on, and you know, there's a couple of stations that you could choose between, and Tom Sawyer would come on, and that's a pretty distinctive song when it starts. Tom Sawyer would come on, and his face be lighting up. Ooh, Rush! And I'd be like, no, not gonna happen. We ain't listening to that crap. So, I mean, that's why he's running this discussion. So he started being the lyricist at that point.
So he became the primary lyricist. So the guys wrote other stuff too, and a lot of the formula was crazy because Alex Lifeson, the guitar player, and Geddy Lee, the bassist, and main vocalist, would write their songs, you know, using a drum machine or having sequences, and then hand it off to Neil, and Neil would write all the drums to it. But his technique with drumming was insane because he would write things for a specific part in a song. He wouldn't just write a drum section, like a loop. Here's the verse part, here's the chorus part. No. Every single time you hear another portion, he's playing a different fill. He's extending it. He's changing the pattern of the drums by the third time you hear it to play something completely different. And it always continued to move forward. It did this cyclical. He was almost like a. He was always. Are you familiar with what a fugue is? Do you know what a fugue is in classical music?
I do, yes.
A fugue is, for everybody who is not, a fugue is something that takes a piece of classical music that takes a pattern and then performs it in a cyclical fashion that doesn't just, when I say cyclical, not like pattern, like first part, second part, third part. It goes first part, variants of third part, or variants of first part, then the next part is where they start taking that pattern and moving it into different areas and making this, it makes the piece just...
I can describe it this way.
It's very strange. I apologize for not being able to describe it.
Here's the best way I could describe it. It's almost like the main rhythm is the start of a family tree, and then it branches out into all these different things that have a characteristic and a connection to the main rhythm.
Yeah.
but have their own characteristics, and somehow you can feel the main rhythm, like, again, the family tree, that main bloodline going through each thing, but they're different variations and takes on it, and sometimes they'll branch back into the main rhythm, branch away, but they're always interconnected with that main rhythm.
And it works in a portion where that main rhythm or that main melody, I would say, is played at different times by different instruments in different keys, but they're always interconnected.
Yeah.
It's like a family.
It's almost a mathematical approach to it.
Yeah, it's very. Yeah, I like the family tree kind of thing because there's always a reference to the original.
Yeah.
As far out as it branches, and it's always related to itself.
It's like it could be way far out on the branch, but that blue eyes is still sticking in there.
Yeah, you know exactly. What I mean? You know,
and it's just that little hint of something, but there's the blue eyes, and then it comes back around to the other setup.
Yeah.
But keeps that blue.
Finding its roots again and then coming back around.
Maybe the blue eyes is the thing that keeps it interconnected and weaves it back in.
And here's what, but that's how he would drum.
It was something that was much more of a.
He would branch off. He would still keep his foundation, but he would branch off so much that you were never bored with listening to it. Even if the guitar riff was the same, the drums are always moving and moving and moving. They're always different. And that is only one part of why the guy was incredibly great. The lyrical content alone is just like ridiculous, because the guy was very philosophical. He was very analytical.
He seemed also very educated.
Extremely. That was his major. That was probably the biggest characteristic.
Which is probably one of the reasons.
He was a philosopher, man. Well, it's like if Socrates was writing rock music.
It's probably one of the reasons why it's not necessarily a band that people just casually get into. Mm-hmm. People that are Rush fans are pretty heavy into Rush, and I think a portion of that may have to do with the fact that it's got a lot more depth to it than what most commercially viable bands have to them.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of all of this, I was lucky enough to see them in 2015.
That's fantastic. I'm glad you were.
It was the only time that I got to see them. I feel extremely blessed for it. Like, it's really, really nice, and I thank my dad constantly for it, especially now.
Yeah.
We were hoping for a reunion to happen they were considering, the possibility, we might get together for an album or something like that, but now it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
He went from being a guy that was added on to being absolutely pivotal to the career of that band.
Yeah.
And without him, there is no replacement. It cannot happen.
No.
Lifeson and Getty might do something, but it won't be Rush. It will be something different. And a lot of Rush fans will have absolute respect for it, but there will also be the shadow of Rush over there.
I mean, anything
they do musically from
him. I can only think of maybe two rock drummers in the world right now. Well, maybe not in the world, but at least in the States, only two rock drummers that I can think of that would even be considered to attempt to do some of the music with them.
Oh, you're just talking on a technical level?
Yeah, only two that I could think of.
Who's that?
Portnoy and Carey. Those are the only two that I could think of.
You know what? Honestly, Taylor Hawkins is one of the best rock drummers I've seen.
But, I mean...
Like, Taylor can do stuff that and...
Well, he doesn't, but he can. Yeah.
Taylor Hawkins does stuff that Grohl can't hang with, and Grohl is an incredible drummer.
Grohl is a decent drummer, better singer in my opinion, better singer than his first singer. I can say
he's
that
a fantastic
for sure.
songwriter in general. Better, I don't share that opinion, better, but better
songwriter,
I
better songwriter than his original songwriter for sure. but that's just my feeling on the matter.
Dang.
But no, I think Portnoy. With his capabilities would be and the fact that he was friends with Neil.
Yeah.
I think that would be, if you were going to have a choice to try to do anything for him, Portnoy would be the first choice.
Yeah.
Carey, maybe.
But here's the thing. I don't know what Portnoy could do to write. See, you have to fill in those multiple cards, and I don't know anybody that actually writes those. Like, you're looking at Carey. Maynard's the lyricist. The singer is the lyricist.
I'm just saying, at least if they were ever to play the music of Rush again, you know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, if they were to go on tour in tribute to... Yeah, and there's going to be some form of a tribute show, and it's going to have a billion acts
doing
their thing. But you, it was really funny because I saw something that somebody tweeted out on Saturday. It's just like, Neil Peart must be laughing. I said Peart. It's Peart, damn it. It's Peart.
Peart. I have a funny story for that in a minute.
It said Neil Peart must be laughing right now, looking at all the bands trying to find a suitable tribute that's actually easy to play.
It's like, wait, we'll play the. Oh, damn. Play that song.
Oh, let's do Tom Sawyer. Oh, never mind.
Well,
Tom Sawyer is crazy hard.
Guitar,
it just sounds like a regular four. The guitarist and the bassist
are like, we can do this. And the drummer's like, no.
Yeah.
What about this song? No.
Yeah. I wanted to cover Rush and Prilosis.
Yeah.
And even Joel's just like, dude, no. And Joel, and this guy listens to Dave Matthews. He plays his stuff. The drummer for Dave Matthews is insane.
He is. He's a very good drummer. He actually the drummer from Dave Matthews, I learned something about him years ago.
Yeah.
He trained his left and right hand to play completely different rhythms.
Oh yeah, polyrhythm, man.
Yeah, but totally different with left and right hand, specifically for working with Dave Matthews. Because the dude wanted to be able to do the things that he needed to with both hands.
Yeah.
But the funny Peart thing. So on Friday afternoon, we're sitting around my house waiting for kind of a big deal that happened. Maybe I'll mention that after the break. Big deal that happened on Friday. We're sitting around waiting. I'm there. My wife's there. The grandmother is sitting there.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, man, I can't believe this just happened. And the wife's like, what? What happened? I just see Neil Peart is dead. Oh, my God. Mike must be going crazy. Because you were the first person I thought of.
Yeah. I wanted to go home. I found out about it while I was at work. I wanted to go home. I wanted to blast 2112, get drunk and cry. Yeah. Like I was like,
you were the first person I thought
not
of.
Been. I haven't been shaken about a celebrity since death God or a musician's death. Yes,
since
exactly.
God died.
Yeah, exactly. Lemmy was the one that took it first.
Yeah,
Lemmy was just like, oh man.
Even
David
Bowie
was pretty up there, but Lemmy was bigger to me.
I get that
personally than David Bowie. Lemmy was like a direct influence. Bowie, I didn't learn to respect until way later.
Just out of curiosity, what's your favorite song that Lemmy wrote?
Orgasmatron.
Okay.
It's big. It sounds huge.
Mine is Mama, I'm Coming Home, but that's just me.
What?
Lemmy wrote that. Yeah.
You just broke my freaking brain, man.
Lemmy,
are you
Lemmy
kidding
wrote
me?
That. Lemmy wrote that. Lemmy wrote Mama, I'm Coming Home. Yeah.
Fuck you, I have to see that. I have to see that. He wrote that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or at least he wrote part of it. But
that's crazy.
I'll show you that on the break.
All right.
But anyway, we're sitting there. I say this, you know, Neil Peart died.
Yeah.
And my wife knows who it is because she's educated on rock music because I do my job right, teaching her.
Yeah.
She knows this. I don't know if the grandmother's paying attention because you never know for sure she's paying attention when I talk. Because I talk a lot. And so people sometimes don't pay attention anymore.
Okay.
And I understand that. I don't feel bad about it because I do talk a lot. I don't always pay attention to what I'm saying. Anyway.
I don't know what you're talking about, James.
Exactly. Not 15 minutes later, the grandmother, do you know who Neil Peart is? And I'm like, yeah, Nanny, he's the drummer I just talked about having died. Oh, yeah, he's dead. It's like, yes, Nanny.
I don't.
I know, Nanny. Thank you, Nanny. All right, we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break.
Yeah.
And then moving on to the
real subject, I guess?
Well, I will actually tell you what. Since we're going to move on to the real subject, I'll mention it before the break.
Okay.
What we were waiting around for on Friday,
uh-huh.
I got to perform my first wedding on Friday.
You told me that's right. Yes. Well, yeah, you texted me, but yeah,
yes,
that's cool.
I am able to perform weddings. I did get certified online because I'm, you know, online is beautiful.
Yeah.
From the American Marriage Ministries. So in California, all you need to have is some church that you're connected with to sign off on it. Doesn't matter what church it is, what denomination, all you need to do is do that.
Sign off
on the paperwork. And the people that got married was my father-in-law.
Uh-huh.
Be clear for anybody listening, my wife's stepfather, because her real father's been married for many, many years to his current wife, but my wife's stepfather, so my father-in-law, got married to a lady he's been seeing. I'm not sure how long they've been together, but they decided, it's a funny thing, they went and got the license because they wanted to get married. They decided they were ready, it was time, they'd been together for long enough, they had been engaged already. They wanted to go and get married. They got the license. They wanted to do it at the courthouse on Friday.
Okay.
Courthouse said, no, you have to give us 24-hour notice before we can set it up because there's appointments and whatnot, so you'd have to wait till Monday.
I didn't know that.
And my father-in-law remembered that when they first got engaged, I had jokingly told him, well, if you want to get married, I can do it for you. I'm, you know, able to do it, to do weddings. And so he called up my wife and said, hey, is James home? Has he gone to school yet? Yeah, James is home. Why? What's up? We want to get married. Can you do it for us? And so they just came over and I did the ceremony.
How did the ceremony go? Was there like a speech and all that kind of stuff too? Or did you just be like,
Did you
Mel Brooks it? Like,
well, I was.
Do you? All right then.
Pretty close. I was pretty well on the spot because I was like, I don't know what they want. I don't know if they want me to prepare a whole bunch of stuff. The wife found a little something for me to read and I read that and I felt bad reading it off the phone. I would have liked to have had some time to memorize it so I didn't have to read it off the phone.
Yeah.
But then I went through the whole,
that's,
you know,
understandable though.
I went through the whole, this is the part where, you know, we do vows back and forth. Do you promise to do this? You know, love, honor, obey. I'm not going to say the obey really because nobody's going to obey anybody. Come on. But, you know, do you take her? Do you take him? Then by the power given to me by the internet and approved by the
internet,
by the state of California.
You said by the internet?
I did.
That's fantastic.
There's a recording of this that is on Facebook.
Oh, I have to see this.
By the power given to me by the internet and approved by the state of California, I now pronounce you husband and wife. And per her request, which makes me so glad that she's now a part of the family, we're going to be seeing her on Christmases, possibly birthdays, because she does actually want to be involved with my kids as a grandmother figure, which I'm always kind of okay with. Per her request, because she knows me,
right?
I ended it with, and may the force be with you, because she asked for that.
Oh,
she asked for me to say those lines.
Great,
so I
dude.
Did. So it was a nice thing. It was very quick. I was just a little, again, I wish I had time to prepare so I could have said better stuff. But hey, they were happy. They kissed. They got married. We even gave them little snack cakes because we didn't have any cake or anything.
Nice.
We gave them each a little snack cake. It was like two in a package,
mm-hmm.
and took pictures of them feeding each other the snack cakes. You know, because they do the whole
effort. Yeah.
Yeah, we have them feed each other the snack cakes.
Aww.
So that was nice.
That's awesome.
But it was just a really cool moment. I've been waiting for. I've been able to do it since 2014. That's when I got registered on the website and whatnot. I've been able to do it since then. I've offered to a couple of different people. Nobody's taken me up on the offer until Friday.
Cool, man.
So, like, it felt bad because, like, we find out that day that this amazing drummer, probably the best drummer living at the time, is gone. But yet, at the same time, I was able to make a couple of people happy by taking care of their wedding.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a nice thing.
You know, life goes on, man.
It
does. Things happen.
All right, we'll take a break now. I love how I'm doing this. Nobody can see me.
Yeah, he's got his arms out.
We'll take a break.
He's trying to control the velociraptors right now.
Either control velociraptors or grab some boobies. One of the two. We'll take a break.
That's weird.
We'll take a break. Got you on that one, Mike. When we're back, we're going to talk about a subject kind of we've talked about before. We've talked about He-Man before.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to talk about not the cartoon, because the cartoon was about selling the toys. And not the toys, because we've talked about the toys. We've talked about this part. We've talked about the movie before.
Okay.
But I'm going to talk about the other effects of the movie. Not just, look at me, I'm Dolph Lundgren. I had to redub my lines. Look at me, I'm Frank Langella. Just chewing scenery left and right and giving an Oscar-worthy performance.
Frank Langella was fantastic in that film.
I'm not Billy Barty eating a bunch of chicken wings. No. No, no, no.
Oh, that was.
I'm not Courtney Cox in one of my first movies ever after dancing on stage with Bruce Springsteen. No, no, that's not what we're talking about.
Get the Bruce Springsteen girl.
We are talking about how He-Man and Superman destroyed a film studio. We'll be back in a minute.
Hey, friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
Woohoo!
I want to share a little funny thing.
What?
Well, it just happened a moment
ago.
Oh, it
just happened a second ago? Go for it.
I want to share it to everybody, because, you know, you'll be on the phone with somebody, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, I was on the phone with my wife. We had a break, so I called my wife, see how things were going, see how her day was. I haven't seen her since I started the day, because she was still asleep when I left with the kids this morning. And so just want to see how things go. Mike comes back in the room. He's went and got his coffee, went to the restroom, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he says, hey, tell her I said hi. And, you know, I she hears it and she's like, tell him I say hi back. That's what she says to me. But I tell Mike, no, fuck you, motherfucker. And
she says,
like,
fuck off, asshole.
Is that what it was? Fuck off, asshole. Yeah. And I say that to Mike. And Mike starts laughing and my wife is yelling in my ear, I did not say that. And Mike's like, I could hear that over from over here. I just love those moments. Those are always fun moments.
Oh, yeah.
Every time anybody asks me over the phone to say hi to somebody else, I never say hi. I always come up with something. Usually it's a little more dirty and profane. there is one word I don't want to use because there's one word I don't want to use, and it's because it's the one word that my wife is not okay with me using. Apparently British people have no problem using the word.
It's the C word. Yep.
That's the only one that I get smacked for using. She doesn't like that word. I like to use that one when I'm doing that little phone joke, just because it's, for American audiences anyway, it's the most startling word you can use.
It really is.
For Brits, it's like a term of endearment almost.
Kind of.
But for American audiences, it's like, oh no, you can't say that. That's awful. That's the worst word ever. So I'll see you next Tuesday. Anyway, what we're talking about now, like I was leading into before we went on break.
Yeah.
He-Man and Superman destroying a film studio.
Yeah, I got to hear about this. So okay, please continue.
Was that the same studio
that put them both out?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, continue.
What we're talking about is a film studio called Canon Films. Canon Films.
Okay.
Sure, you remember having seen Canon Films in front of movies before?
Fully known, but I mean, I was also like four.
Well, there's some of these movies that might actually sound familiar to you and stuff that you may have seen.
Okay.
Okay. So Canon Films first incorporated on October 23rd, 1967. Yes, this is well before the
Zenio. They've been around a long time.
Well, the original part of Canon Films had, yes, but not the Canon Films that we know and love for the movies that they put out.
Okay. So what was the first Canon Films?
It was originally founded by a guy named Dennis Friedland.
Okay.
And Chris Dewey. These guys were in their 20s when they found this.
Okay.
What they started doing is they started actually dubbing Swedish softcore porn and redistributing it in the U.S.
Oh, my goodness. This sounds like gold.
And that helped them to make a bunch of like really, really bad B movies. They kept the amount of the budget. He didn't tell me anything about what any of this stuff had done.
And I did not look it up. Yeah, that's so legit surprise.
They made B movies that had a cap of $500,000 for the budget. Just $500,000. This is in the 60s and 70s.
You can't make... Even then, that's like nothing.
That's like nothing for budget. But part of the way that they were helping do this is subsidize the income from this was, again, the Swedish softcore porn. Which, hey, I mean...
So they made the money for the film budget by dubbing Swedish softcore porn.
Yes.
But that's amazing.
It wasn't working out the way they wanted to. And in 1979, they were in some serious money trouble. They weren't making enough money.
You mean there was no money in it?
Well, not in the films they were making beyond the Swedish softcore. And I mean, honestly, if you're going to watch Swedish porn, don't go for the softcore. I'm just saying. Blue is the warmest color. I think it's a Swedish movie.
Right.
Blue is the warmest color. Are you familiar with this film?
No.
All I'm going to say is if you like girl-on-girl action, that's a movie, but not... This is a legitimate movie, not even a porn.
Oh.
This is a legitimate
like
film.
Like it's a theatrical release
film? Yes. That has some of the best girl-on-girl I have ever heard of. I'm not going to say seen because I'm not going to say whether I've seen it or not, but that I've ever heard of happening in a modern film. And the thing that's different about it apparently is the fact that it's not like a porn where it's just people like just going at each other.
Right.
There's emotion involved. There's like connection between the people involved, and it makes it actually even better. It is very hardcore. Very hardcore.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Blue is the warmest color. Check it out. Anyway.
You heard it from James endorsing blue is the warmest color.
I'm going to be in so much trouble for this.
But anyway.
This
has been James endorsing porn.
Hey, if it's what works for you. So in 1979, they were having some serious money trouble.
Okay.
They ended up having to sell Canon. They had to sell Canon
films.
Oh,
they had to sell the company.
They only sold it for $500,000, interestingly enough.
Was that for the film budget?
Or did that
go by the wayside?
That's what they used to give for film budgets, but they ended up selling it for that same amount, which is weird.
Wow. So for the price of a single film, you could have the whole damn company?
Basically.
All right.
They sold it to two Israeli cousins. Okay, these cousins were, I'm going to see if I can get this right, Menachem Golan and Yoram Globus.
I do not know how to spell or pronounce either of those.
Well, they ended up creating, as part of Canon, Golan Globus Films. Oh, now we're seeing recognition.
Yeah, the light bulb went off.
Recognition happened.
What?
This is the start of Golan Globus Films.
Oh.
By buying up Canon.
Okay, Now.
Let me list off a few films.
Okay, yeah, please continue.
Let me list off a few films that, as a result of the 1979 purchase, 1979 puts us right into the Zennial age of things.
Right. Things start coming out.
Let me tell you some of the films that they made under the Canon Golan Globus moniker. Okay. Delta Force.
Really?
Delta Force.
The Chuck Norris movie?
Delta Force, yes, sir.
Wow, okay.
The first two American Ninja movies. The Michael Dudikoff American Ninja movies? Yeah. How about Breakin'?
Really?
How about Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo? The best film title ever?
If they ever did... Okay, look, if they did the first one, they had to have done the second one. Come on.
How about...
Who would get away with gold like that not doing the second one?
Yeah.
Not doing a sequel.
How about The Last American Virgin? That's more of a drama, but still.
Never heard that one. Okay. I've never seen that one.
King Solomon's Mine.
Okay.
Cobra.
Shut up.
Cobra.
Damn, like these guys are like responsible for like major action 80s cinema.
They also did, there was another Chuck Norris one that was based off the Rambo script.
Lone Wolf McQuade?
No.
where he kicks down a house?
No, where he's the POW in the jungle.
Oh.
I just can't remember the name of it. Anywho.
Yeah.
Anywho. In 1988, they started hitting some major financial issues.
Okay.
Because of the failure of two of their major movies. By the way, these aren't the only movies they did. These are just some of the big names
people
would really recognize.
Okay.
Missing in Action. That's the newest one.
Was based on kind of like loosely based on Rambo?
Yeah.
Rambo does good. Put this one out.
Yeah, they kind of
ape,
they
yeah, yeah, I get it.
They aped the original James Cameron treatment of the Rambo script. James Cameron originally wrote a Rambo script.
Yeah.
That's not the one that was filmed into the movies, but whatever.
Really?
And also, just for purists, the first movie that stars Rambo is not called Rambo. It's called First Blood.
Yes. It's a fantastic film.
The first one is good. The second one is just a bunch of people just dying.
It kept going haywire for a while. The third one is...
The third one is ISIS promotion, but, you know, it's Al-Qaeda promotion, but whatever. We'll get into that another day.
Oh, man, seeing it now, did you know they changed the end of the film in the wake of it?
They took that thing off? They took the dedication off?
They didn't take it off. They rededicated it to, rededicated it to the people of Afghanistan, I think, or something
like that. Instead of the Mujahideen?
Instead of the Mujahideen. Which, what we're talking about, by the way, we should at least mention this now
Want me to take it over?
Yeah, go for it, dude.
I brought this one to you, right?
Yeah, yeah. You told me about this, and what's really funny is I saw somebody else talking about it in a video. I watched Game Grumps, and Dan, the guy was sick, and all of the Rambo movies were like on a marathon, so he marathoned them on like Netflix or something.
And he's freaking out about Rambo 3.
And he was like watching the third one, and he's like, this is super hard to watch. Yeah. Oh, my God. Especially in the wake of what's going on now. And
the third one, the third Rambo, for anybody who has not seen it, I actually saw the third Rambo sitting in the back of my parents' station wagon at a double feature at a drive-in theater.
Okay.
A drive-in movie theater.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when it originally came out, when Rambo 3 originally came out.
Yeah.
And what happens in Rambo 3 is... Troutman, the colonel that he's been connected to from all the different movies that should have killed him at the end of First Blood, like the novel did, but instead he lived. In the novel, the character of John Rambo dies.
Yeah, I know. And they filmed that ending, but the test audiences hated it.
Well,
and
Stallone didn't want him to die. And, hey, it made Stallone a crap load of money. I mean, they just put out a new Rambo movie, which was apparently awful, but still, they just put out a new one.
Apparently, it's supposed to be the final one.
It is, hopefully. but anyway, I remember watching it, sitting in the back, eating from a tin of popcorn, since you could bring whatever you wanted to one of those to the drive-in theaters. But anyway, So what happens is Troutman gets kidnapped, if it were, by Russians.
Yes.
In Afghanistan.
Yes. Now, the year this takes place is what, 86?
It's in the 80s. It's in the mid-80s. Because he's there in Afghanistan trying to help the Afghani people fight off Russian insurgency, USSR insurgency. Because at that time, Russia was part of the USSR, the United Soviet Socialist Republic.
They're beating the commies.
And so Rambo goes there, allies himself with the Mujahideen, the Afghani freedom fighters, fighting against the Russians, trying to get Troutman back. He gets Troutman back. He fights off the Russians, blows up one of their helicopters, because one of the bad things about the Russian helicopters, they were really really powerful, had a lot of armament on them.
Yeah.
But they had glass bottoms so that people could see, and it was not bulletproof glass. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Not a good design choice. But anyway.
No.
And in fact, he charges a helicopter at one point on a horse. So he ends up defeating the helicopter by firing.
Of course he does.
By firing an explosive tipped arrow at the helicopter. Because, I mean, that's Rambo.
I'm going to say this now.
Yeah.
You're telling me that Zelda bomb arrows, which are like, that's kind of like been a thing for 20 years
that's
now.
That's how you beat a helicopter.
Apparently that's how you beat a helicopter is with a bomb arrow. John Rambo invented the bomb arrow, apparently.
I mean, it is Rambo.
So did he like MacGyver it and like tape a bomb to the end of it and fire it, kind of a deal?
No, he had arrows that had special tips on them that were explosive tips.
Oh, so it just went like James Bond on it?
Kind of.
Okay.
Anyway.
It's the 80s, man. Everything is apparently forgivable.
The thing that's problematic nowadays about this, these Afghani Mujahideen fighters are the same ones that ended up eventually becoming what we knew as Al-Qaeda.
Okay, so to preface this a little bit, just to kind of help explain it.
Yeah.
That's really, really funny nowadays to look at.
Yeah.
We are years and years removed from what happened. I'm not saying anything is any laughing matter. That's not what I'm saying.
No, and it's just to look at it.
It's a little funky now to look at it because we were fighting alongside them against the Russians in the
80s. And the U.S. was.
And we were selling them weapons. That's what we were doing.
We weren't just selling them weapons. We were giving them weapons like Stinger missiles, things like that to combat the Russians. We were empowering the Afghani people to do this. And eventually those people that we were allied with and empowered, once the Soviet Union fell apart and Afghanistan did get its freedom, these same tribal groups and tribal leaders are what ended up forming the backbone of the Al-Qaeda terrorist organizations.
Right.
So to watch it now, it's kind of like, oh, Rambo helped Al-Qaeda. And, I mean, that's not literally what happened, but at the same time, it does draw some weird parallels.
Well, of course, like political affiliations change over, things happen, war sucks, but... Yeah. How poignant.
But
things happen, and it's just really funky to know that that's where that came from.
Yeah.
And then go watch, see if you could find it on DVD at a freaking...
I actually have an older DVD copy of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably not going to see it unless you see it on VHS or on original DVD that you find at a swap meet or something.
Nobody's really advertising it anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway. Anyway, back to the point of Canon Films and Golan Globus Films production. There were two films, two major big films that they were hoping was going to make money.
Uh-huh.
One of them was based on a popular toy franchise, He-Man.
Okay.
And it was the Masters of the Universe movie, obviously.
The one with Dolph Lundgren.
The Dolph Lundgren and Masters of the Universe movie. The other one was based
Get
on...
Get the Springsteen girl!
The other one was based on literally the... biggest comic book franchise in the United States, possibly in the world even at that point, that had already had two successful movies and one semi-successful movie.
Okay.
And so, Masters of the Universe.
Okay.
And Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Of course it was Superman 4.
Of course it was.
That's the worst damn Superman film ever.
Even worse than the
yes,
Brandon
it's worse
Routh
than
one?
Yes, it's worse than Returns.
Okay,
I'll even though that. Returns is based on the Donner cut of the second film and completely removes it from continuity, Superman 4 sucked.
Well, no, I mean, and that's the thing is, the Superman Returns basically forgets
Excuse
3
my
and 4.
Passion for it?
No, have the passion.
Terrible.
For it. It's an awful film, and part of it was because they ran out of money in the budget because these films were tanking this studio. Now, the studio had planned. The studio actually
had... You know how much Superman 4 sucks? Superman Returns has Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor, and Superman 4 still sucks worse than that. That's how bad, especially in like the light of what's going on with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. No.
The guy's like, unforgivable. I can't watch Usual Suspects again. Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah.
Superman 4 still worse than that.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Well, see, when these were going to be their benchmark movies that were going to make them money. These were the two. You have the successful toy franchise that's making money. The cartoon was making money. You have Superman, who's a guaranteed moneymaker in their minds. These were going to be the things that were going to bring them in revenue.
Right.
And so they had extended themselves a little bit. They had bought up some rights for a few other things, and they had already been planning a Masters of the Universe sequel.
Okay.
Which is why at the end of Masters of the Universe, you have Skeletor's head popping up, "I'll be back," at the end of the credits. Yeah.
Only thing I didn't like about that film.
Okay. Well, they did that because their plans were...
Although the laugh was really cool.
Their plans were to have a sequel. In fact, they had already written most of the sequel, and they were already in pre-production on the sequel.
And Langella would have been 100% down for it at the time. He loved playing Skeletor.
When it bombed in the theater, which, by the way, saw that one in the theater, too. When that bombed in the theater, and when Superman 4 bombed in the theater...
I just don't remember seeing it. I was a kid.
Master of the Universe bombed before Superman 4 did, and Superman 4, again, they started running out of funding. When those two things bombed...
Did they start cutting funding after Masters of the Universe bombed? Because this,
yes.
Why would you doom a film like that, though? Like, I know that it wasn't great.
They were already prepared in pre-production stuff, okay? For the newest Master of the Universe. Plus, they were prepared in pre-production for another film that they had gotten the rights for.
Uh-huh.
Because they had also been able to purchase some rights for another comic book property.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody wanted to make the films at that point. They'd made some cartoons about it, TV stuff, but nobody wanted to make the films on it. They, at that point, owned the rights to Spider-Man and Captain America.
No
from
shit.
Marvel.
Because Sony hadn't bought Spider-Man yet.
They were in the process of trying to make a Spider-Man movie, and were trying to tap James Cameron to be involved in the Spider-Man movie, who wanted Michael Biehn to play Peter Parker.
No.
Yes.
Kyle Reese was going to play Peter Parker?
I mean, if you want to refer to him as Kyle Reese, I like to refer to him as Hicks, but that's just me. Somebody wake up, Hicks.
Personally, Johnny Ringo.
Okay.
Johnny Ringo is my favorite of any of the characters he played.
Whatever, I like Hicks. Hicks is a badass. Hicks would have beat the crap out of Johnny Ringo, I'm just saying. Just saying. You could see, the thing is, Johnny Ringo could have got the draw on Hicks. He could have shot Hicks, and then Hicks just would have throttled him to death. Just choked the life out of him. But that's just my feeling on that.
But here's the thing, like, those characters don't fit Peter Parker as a character.
I know. Behan is just somebody that James Cameron
is in love with. But he also
Cameron
wasn't very developed,
with.
Especially in film yet. I mean, no. The only reference to Spider-Man they had was, like, the you know, strings the on the wall. No, the... Terrible, the suck-ass TV series.
Yeah, the crappy one,
the
yes.
Strings on the Wall TV series from, like, CBS, I think, was what it was?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
Oh, God, that was horrible.
Anyway.
Go back and watch Cinema Gold like that, though.
They had the rights to these properties, and in fact, they were in the pre-production period for Spider-Man, starting to build some costuming and stuff.
Right.
Again, they were in pre-production for Masters of Universe with costuming and sets and all kinds of stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the script, they even had a script for Masters of the Universe.
Okay.
The second one. So, they had, like I said, the costumes, they had all the other stuff. They ended up, again, falling apart financially. They were just,
right,
they were just
right.
Dying.
They were
so,
gone.
A company, an Italian company, Pathé Communications,
mm-hmm.
Ended up having to take over Canon.
Okay.
And Golan of Golan Globus, Golan left to start 21st Century Film Corporation. He took with
21st Century Film Corporation, like just an homage or just like a ripoff of 20th Century Fox?
I guess.
Because it's coming up on, because it's the 80s, it's the mid-80s, right?
Yeah. So, late 80s, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like...
So he took the Marvel rights with him, the two Marvel rights that he had, and... He ended up making a Captain America movie, the one that with Captain America on the motorcycle and the one that was direct to
video. He made that one?
That's his movie that he made with the Captain America rights.
Oh, God, that was horrible.
But Pathé owning Canon, they released...
That's like as bad as the Fantastic Four movie.
The Corman one?
Yeah.
The Corman one is awful. And he made that in like...
Rubber suit.
A couple of weeks. Because he wanted to keep the rights to it.
But rubber suit thing.
Because Corman had the rights to it at that point because Marvel was selling off... Stan Lee at that point was selling off the rights to anybody that wanted them because nobody wanted to make comic book movies. We're actually going to have a discussion about that next week.
Oh, okay.
About why cinema has changed and how Scorsese is both right and wrong with his talk of these movies not being cinema. Something happened to change this.
Really?
And so we'll get into that next week.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
But anyway, while Pathé Communications did that, or while Golan did that with 21st Century Film Corporation,
right,
Pathé Communications released one more movie under the Canon kind of name.
Okay.
Okay, at that point, one more major movie. That major movie took the sets and the script from the Masters of the Universe movie and took some of the props and again, some of the set stuff that they were setting up for the live-action Spider-Man movie.
Uh-huh.
They tweaked the script a little bit and put out what I feel is one of the finest examples of crappy 80s B movies. Probably one of the... This is one...
Are we talking like this is like a B movie treasure here? Is that what it is?
In my mind, it is, especially for my childhood.
Okay.
Because of the person who starred in it, because I was a huge fan of him.
Okay.
Growing up.
Okay.
There are many martial artists that we've discussed martial artists before that we've been fans of.
Yeah, totally. There's,
obviously, Chuck Norris was involved in some of these films.
Of course.
We've talked Bruce Lee before a little bit.
Yeah.
But we've talked about this guy as probably one of my favorite martial artists growing up.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about?
No.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
What movie did he do?
Think back to the late 80s. Think back to possibly the very worst film that he did in that time period. And there's some bad ones, don't get me wrong, but the very worst film that he did.
Let me think. You're talking like super tech, that kind of stuff. Is there tech in it? Because
there's some
tech
in it.
That was kind of like Masters of the Universe had a lot of tech in it.
There's some tech in it. There's kind of a post-apocalyptic kind of world to it.
Time Cop?
No.
Universal Soldier?
No.
Because that had Lundgren in it, too.
That did have Lundgren in it.
It wouldn't have been like the two movies that he's like known for in the 80s is like Bloodsport and Kickboxer.
Okay, those are two of his most popular ones.
But the other ones, I can't think of.
This is why this one falls into the B
movie
category.
And then he blew up in the 90s, like where, you know, like everybody had a mullet. But
this was a direct-to-video type movie, too. I don't believe it ever had theatrical release.
Okay, then I'm not sure I'm familiar with it. Which one are you talking about?
Cyborg.
I forgot about Cyborg. Yes. I think the only time I ever saw that was like on Fox on Sunday.
I think
they double featured it with Universal Soldier like one weekend or something.
This is one of those that I spent so much time in the video store at that time period, and anything that was Jean-Claude Van Damme, I had to rent and get.
Okay.
And Cyborg, yeah, just a post-apocalyptic futuristic vibe. There's some Jesus imagery in the thing because he gets nailed up to something at one point in a Jesus pose.
Really?
I mean, there's some hardcore stuff in this movie that it's just like, it's such an awful, awful B movie. I mean, it's as bad as like in Demolition Man. At the end of Demolition Man, when Wesley Snipes has all of his crew together and they're all wearing basically tires as their armor and whatnot, it's that level of bad.
It's like just rubber Mad Max.
It's so awful.
It's
the Masters of the Universe 2 script reworked using the sets and the costumes they had, and for some reason, somehow using sets and costumes they had from the Spider-Man live action movie. I don't know how that all fit in, but it did. That's what they did.
That saved on a ton of budget too.
Yeah, it was made for not very much. I think Van Damme probably got paid more than the rest of the film budget was.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But
damn, dude.
Eventually Pathé ends up controlling MGM.
Okay.
Like Metro Goldwyn Mayer.
Yeah,
like
MGM.
And the Canon Library ends up becoming a part of MGM, except where, like...
Oh, that's some, why they started releasing Brothers. Them all with the MGM name on them.
Yeah, except in the few spots where there's some Warner Brothers overconnection, like in the Superman.
Yeah, Superman was a Warner property,
but,
of course.
Canon officially closed down in 1994. They made about 5 to 10 more movies, 5 name movies, but there were other ones that were made that weren't anything special.
Right.
None of the movies, I mean, I'm a big movie guy. You know that. I read the names of all five of these movies that were their big movies that they made. I didn't recognize a single damn name.
Really?
Yeah. They just were kind of folded after that. And then that was under both the MGM and Canon logos. They made those final set of movies. But it's just funny to note that this one little film company that started with Swedish softcore porn made some movies in the 80s that are just, I mean, Delta Force is one of the bigger movies, especially for Chuck Norris.
Oh, yeah.
One of the bigger movies of his career.
Yeah.
And then to have the worst Superman ever, by your admission, the worst Superman ever.
Oh, bad.
The Masters of the Universe movie, which to me is just an 80s classic. I mean, that's one of the best movies of the 80s. As awful as it is,
there's an enjoyability to the cheese factor on it.
Yeah.
You know? And then that's the thing.
I love the fact that there's this level of interconnectedness. Just, you know, again, I used to love playing the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon game when we worked at Blockbuster.
Yeah.
I used to love doing that as a party trick. Just the fact you have Dolph Lundgren in Masters of the Universe. Then you have Jean-Claude Van Damme in the basically Masters of the Universe sequel, Cyborg.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get them in Universal Soldier, like you said. The fact that Missing in Action, the Chuck Norris thing, was a Rambo kind of rewrite, rewrite of the Rambo script or one of the Rambo scripts. And then you end up with Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone in the Rocky movies.
Yep.
And just I love the interconnectivity of all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's so great. It's one of the reasons why I love watching the Stallone movies that he's gotten all the action stars to be in with him.
Oh, the Expendables.
Yes, I love watching those because I love the pair-ups of the different action stars.
That's half the reason why they're so successful.
More than half the reason. That's the entire reason. They're god-awful action movies with stupid plot lines.
Yeah, but it's about like who's there.
Yeah.
You know, well, seeing people do that like one more time kind
they
of deal.
Set you
even
up
though
for,
they've done like a billion sequels now.
Well, they set you up for like in the first one, they set you up for a Stallone versus Lundgren fight.
Yeah.
They set you up, and it ends up being a Jet Li versus Lundgren fight, which is hilarious because Dolph Lundgren is a big dude.
Yeah, and Jet Li's tiny.
Yeah, Jet Li's a little short guy, and the fight between them is hilarious. Lundgren's just throwing him around all over the place.
Yeah.
And Li is having to move in and out of objects to beat the crap out of him.
That's great.
And it's just a hilarious fight back and forth.
That's great.
And then
pulling in
Mel Gibson eventually to be a villain, and then Jean-Claude Van Damme to be a villain.
Isn't his last name Villain?
Villain, yeah. His name is Villain. And the only upside is he does two of his kicks in the final fight. He does two of his kicks, which you have to have. You have to have the Van Damme kick. If you have Van Damme in the movie, unless he's playing a comedic part.
You have to have the split kick.
There is a comedic part that he did play recently in a film that was hilarious. I'm going to have to find the name of the film
again. I think he plays like a guide or something like that.
Yeah, but he doesn't actually know what he's doing, and he ends up getting injured halfway through, so half the movie he's being wheeled around in a wheelbarrow. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
It's an office group that goes on this like retreat on this island.
Yeah,
to try to do team building exercise, but it ends up everything falling apart. And Van Damme is supposed to be the one showing them around, but he gets injured, finds out he doesn't know what he's doing. He's basically built the company out of this, so it turns into a whole Lord of the Flies thing where you get different factions of people. And he's injured, so he's being wheeled around in a wheelbarrow for half the movie. It's such a great film. And especially for him, his comedic timing is fantastic in the movie.
You don't think
this guy's got comedy chops? He's hilarious. Anyway, that will do it for today. Now you know how He-Man and Superman destroyed a film studio. Who knows? We could have had more Swedish softcore porn. That's sad. We're missing out.
They should have stuck with what they knew, damn it.
They should have. They should have. Stay in your lane, damn it. We'll be back next week to talk about, I already know what we're going to talk about, this is a little bit of preparedness. We're going to talk about the shift in cinema, and again, this Martin Scorsese thing has been something we've talked about all this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have evidence to prove not only is he right,
mm-hmm.
but he's wrong, and this shift may very well be the hallmark of the Zennial generation.
So he's both.
He's both.
I've got to hear this now. This is fun.
Like I said,
this sounds fun.
This may be one of the hallmarks of our generation, and maybe
because I know where you stand with especially Scorsese. Like you've said it multiple times.
If he was here, I would shit on his head.
Wow,
that's the level of anger that I have at him at this point. But I'm starting to lessen that as I start to realize when I was doing research on this, I'm starting to realize that he's wrong, but he's right. He's okay. Right, but he's wrong.
Okay.
It's a cultural shift hasn't fully understood yet, and I think I'm starting to understand where this shift happens. And it happens in 1977 at the start of the Zennial generation.
I think I know where you're going. Cool.
Yeah, I think you may.
Cool.
All right, we will be back next week to talk about this. Mike, where can people listen to us?
Well, our main website is thezennialchronicles.com, or you can also type zenchron.com. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Zenchron. That's spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. Our podcast normally only has like the last 10 episodes or so. So our entire archive is available on YouTube. We're actually, speaking of YouTube, we're working on a bit of a quality shift. Those yes. videos, there's something wrong with the conversion. We're working on getting that handled right now. So hopefully soon we'll be able to debut higher quality videos.
Is this the background thing?
Well, it's not just the background thing.
Because we may have a new background.
I'm working on a technical thing that may be a new background. Let's not go too crazy into that yet, because that may or may not shift. Ooh. I don't know what's going on. I'm still working on that as the tech guy.
Okay.
I'm just working on trying to put out higher quality conversions, because man, and I may go back and get the other ones done too.
Okay,
and like start to flip things over. I don't know yet. It depends on my
because we want your enjoyment as much as possible. Whether you're listening on, did you list out the places? Spotify?
Not yet. We're also on Spotify. Tune in. You can find us on Google Podcasts.
Yes.
You can. We need to do the URL thing. Yeah, we're going to throw the URL on our website and also share it so that you can get it.
The thing is, even though you're listening to us, even if you may be listening to us on those things, if you're going to go watch on YouTube and listen on YouTube, we want to make it as aesthetically pleasing as possible. We want to make it the best experience you can have to be
something that, you know, something that's nice, but at the same time, you know, kind of gives a little bit more than what we've been giving in the video conversion aspect of
we
it.
We want to give you more.
Wow.
Anyway,
calm down there, pal.
Nope. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we will talk to you again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.